This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tracy Sandler Show, brought to you by Fevo. I am your host, Tracy Sandler. And in just a few minutes, I'm very excited to welcome The Athletic's Fabian Ardaya to the show to talk all things Los Angeles Dodgers. But first, we got to talk 49ers schedule. The NFL released the schedule this week and looks like the San Francisco 49ers will be racking up some miles, which means this beat reporter talking to you right now will also be racking up quite a few miles. But let's take a look. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. That's some good stuff. They will also be playing the Titans and the Raiders away for two preseason games. So there's that. Now the main event, of course, the season. So for the first time since 2020, the 49ers will start their season at home. It has been a while. And they will host the New York Jets, Robert Saleh, Aaron Rodgers and company on September 9th for Monday Night Football. So many storylines to come there. Then they're off to Minnesota to see, you guessed it, J.J. McCarthy and the Minnesota Vikings. Whether or not McCarthy will be the starter at that point, who's to say? If it were up to me, he would be, but we'll see. You guys may know I am a newly minted Vikings fan, Skull. Then the Niners head to LA to take on the Rams, and then they will host the Patriots and then the Cardinals at home, and then they are off to Seattle. The 49ers have six primetime games this season, so that's a lot. They're off to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. They host the Chiefs for a Super Bowl rematch. Then they host the Vikings for another primetime game on October 27th. Then it's the bye week. This has been there around the time of their bye week the last few years. For those of us that love Halloween, that's me. I don't hate it. But this is bye week time for the 49ers. Then they will come back and head to Tampa Bay to take on the Bucs. Then to Seattle, or then they host Seattle, excuse me, host the Seahawks at Levi Stadium. Now, here is a brutal stretch. November 24th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving, the 49ers head to Green Bay. Then the following week, they head to Buffalo. It's just a lot of travel in a week across the country. But That's how the cookie crumbles. Then they will be hosting the Chicago Bears. Be interesting to see how the young Mr. Caleb Williams is doing at that point. Then they host the Rams and then off to Miami on December 22nd. More storylines, Mike McDaniel and the Miami Dolphins just before Christmas. And then on the 30th, host the Detroit Lions, an NFC Championship rematch. And then it'll be off to Arizona either January 4th or January 5th. So obviously that is the season in a nutshell, but lots of fun games, lots of storylines, and this should be quite the season. A lot of travel, a lot of back and forth to the East Coast. Obviously they travel a lot every year, but a lot of miles going to be racked up for this one. I mentioned the 6 primetime games. Should be a very fun season for San Francisco. Certainly some time before it all begins. Next up, OTAs, mini camp, the break and training camp. Make sure you're listening to the Tracy Samler Show because I will obviously be at OTAs and mini camp and will bring you all the news and info that you might need from there. But for now, let's head to the next part of the show. Fabian Ardaya from The Athletic to talk all things Los Angeles Dodgers. And here we go. All right, guys, as promised, I have Dodgers reporter Fabian Ardaya from The Athletic to talk some Dodgers baseball. 49ers fans, if you want to turn it off now, I don't think you should, because at the time that we're recording, the Dodgers are in the middle of their series with the Giants, which might actually make some of these fans turn it off. We are recording on Wednesday. The Dodgers are up 2-0 in the series, coming off a series where they lost to the Padres. Dominating the Giants, two very different baseball teams. These rivalry games are always fun just because of the rivalry. But hey, guys, Brock Purdy threw out the first pitch on Tuesday. So that was something to be excited about. It seemed, Fabian, that he did a little better than we saw Fred Warner do at the beginning of the season.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he apparently has a pretty good arm. I think that they should keep an eye on that. They should probably use that. Yeah, definitely.
I remember when Fred Warner and Debo did it, I tweeted, we've seen Debo throw a touchdown pass. We should hope that we never have to see Fred Warner do whatever it was that he did there on the mound. And to his credit, when we talked to him during the early portion of OTAs, he did say he'd like a do-over. So at least he understands that it was not his best showing. But let's talk a little Dodgers. And I think the first thing I'd like to jump into is Walker Buehler. Because, you know, we've seen him come out. He's had he had an okay first start, a little rougher second start. I am not a pitching coach or pitching expert, but it would seem to me that there's going to be a little bit of a ramp up time and that we're not going to see the Walker Buehler of old right away. We may never see the Walker Buehler of old again, but certainly not right away. Kind of what are your thoughts on that? And what are you hearing of the Dodgers concerned at all?
I don't think they're concerned right now. I think they're willing to be really patient with this. I think they know as well as anyone, like what the track record is with these 2-time Tommy John recipients. And the fact that the velocity sort of gotten back to where Buehler would like it to be. That's an encouraging sign, but there's still like a lot of the finer things that it shows he hasn't thrown in 2 years. Like there's a lot of like finishing off hitters, a lot of covering the base, like covering the first base bag, controlling the running game. Like there's all kinds of like little intricacies that Walker Buehler himself admitted, like he still has to work his way back into. So yeah, it's clear that the breaking ball command hasn't been great. The fastball has been getting hit. Hasn't been the best locations, like those normal locations where when he was starting 98 and 99 with incredible run, like he was able to get away with 96, 97, where it's a good fastball, not a great fastball. He's going to have to learn to adjust and adapt a little bit. I don't know if he'll necessarily have to completely change who he is as a pitcher, but he is going to have to change some things overall. And that's something that he's going to have to learn. That's what the next couple months are for, sort of figuring out who he is now within his body. And figuring that part out. But I think they trust a lot in the person. They trust a lot in how smart he is. And they figure he'll find a way to figure things out. But yeah, they're going to be willing to be patient with him for sure.
How hard mentally is that for a pitcher?
I mean, I'm sure it's very difficult. If you want to try to do something that your body just can't let you do, or it's not quite as sharp as it used to be. Like you spend your entire rehab trying to get back to this point, but then you realize that there's a lot of stuff at the big league level. It's just even faster than it is in AAA. I think something that's sort of besides the point, but like the gap between the minors and the big leagues in terms of level of play has never been wider. So I think that makes it tougher for some guys coming off rehabs, especially when they're trying to get those last little things dialed in.
So when you look at the Dodgers pitching staff, and I don't have all of it in front of me, but it feels like a large number of the pitchers are injured. And it wouldn't be a Dodgers pitching staff if one guy didn't go on the IL just as another guy was coming off. And so here we are at the end of May. Obviously, the Dodgers, more often than not, are dominating teams. The pitching staff has improved dramatically with Tyler Glasnow and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who didn't have maybe his best start Monday night, but he got it done. He had several innings, which they needed. And of course, they end up winning the game. So these next few months, how much of it is we just keep winning and winning, and it's just getting everyone healthy for October?
Yeah, I think that's kind of always been sort of how they viewed this pitching staff. I think they kind of understood that they were signing some guys with injury histories or guys with uncertain futures, just in terms of like being able to get through a full season. So they kind of built it that way, hoping that just quantity would help make up for it. And so far, they've managed to make it work, even with Bobby Miller going down, even with Emmett Sheehan not throwing a single pitch for them this season. They still managed
to...
They still managed to make it work with some of the rotation pieces they've had. And now they're in a position where they can make some tough decisions. Like, we'll see what happens when Bobby Miller gets back and where things sort of stand. Gavin Stone has been throwing the ball really well. I think the big thing right now, concern-wise, injury-wise, is the bullpen, because four of their top five sort of leverage relievers are all injured right now. And then the two guys that are trying to rely on most, and Blake Trinan and Daniel Hudson, are guys who barely pitched in 2 years and who are on the other side of 35. Like, there's a lot of like random sort of situations in the air. They're trying to figure out, see if there's any guys in their bullpen depth that maybe could be a little bit more than just depth. You're starting to see guys like Alex Vesca turn things around a little bit. JP Fireisen's on a little bit of a run. So if you can find a couple of those guys, maybe that's an added benefit here. But yeah, they would rather be in a position where they can sort of have Evan Phillips, Bruiser, Gratterall, all these guys sort of on the back end of the bullpen by the end of the year.
Because I forget that, as you're saying names, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot he was hurt. Oh yeah, I forgot that he was hurt. And we're going to get to Shohei, because obviously we have talked about Shohei, but I want to talk a little bit more pitching, because you have Tony Gonsolin, who's still hurt. Dusty May is still hurt. Clayton Kershaw is hurt. How likely do you think it is that any of those guys come back and start and become relievers?
As relievers, I'm not sure. I think it's a little bit early for sort of picturing that. Tony Gonsolin's going to be out for the year. That's for sure. Clayton Kershaw started throwing bullpen sessions. That's a good sign, but I think all indications are they're going to give him chances to start. And Dustin May, he should be starting up throwing bullpen soon. He's a guy who I'm sure they have to have some sort of restrictions on him, considering it's been two major elbow surgeries in 3 years. Like, he's still trying to work his way back. They're probably going to slow play him, and then you can sort of see where he kind of fits into that picture latter half of the season. There might be a situation where they have enough healthy starters that they kind of have to sort of figure out how to be creative with guys. But we all know that there's no such thing as too many healthy starters. So
that is for sure. I don't think I realized that Tony Gonsolin was out for the entire year. Somehow I did not know that. So I'm glad that you brought that up. It's funny too with Dustin May. So I went to Michigan. I'm a diehard Michigan fan, and they just hired a coach by the name of Dusty May. So I'm constantly calling Dusty May, Dustin May, and Dustin May, Dusty May. So I do that all the time. Yeah. It's funny. I had a thought the other day, and no one's asked my opinion, but that's why I get to have a podcast. But I had a thought the other day, because way back in the day with the Atlanta Braves, John Smoltz, who was a heck of a starter for them, later in his career became their closer and came out of the bullpen. And I was thinking the other day if that was a possibility for Clayton Kershaw. I certainly know that's not where they're going to start, but it's an interesting thought.
I'm not sure for Kershaw, just because he's so routine oriented. I think that'd be difficult to sort of change that to become a reliever. But I think with someone like Dustin May down the line, maybe it depends obviously on health. Like, I think ideally they would love for him to stay a starter, but if he's in a position where his body can't hold up, maybe that's something that you can sort of see long term, just because of his velocity and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't see that in the future for Clayton Kershaw.
All right, well, there goes my hot take. But if it happens, however, I would like credit. Yeah. That's my one thing. If it happens, I like credit. All right, let's move to the offense. Let's talk about Shohei Ohtani, who I think in many ways has perhaps been better than advertised. I actually have a question for you about Shohei, and you're probably not going to know the answer to it, but just would like your thoughts. Do you think there's a chance he doesn't pitch again, for the that he ends up just staying in this DH role even when he's fully healthy, or is part of the reason they gave him all that money because he will also pitch?
That's part of the reason why they gave him all that money. I think they're going to give him every chance they can to pitch. I think, I mean, obviously things are kind of, are trending well with the starting progression. It's something where like they're going to be really slow with it. They've said repeatedly he's not going to pitch this season.
Right.
But I mean, things are sort of tracking well. And I think you kind of look at the potential there, the fact that he can throw, that he has the type of stuff that he does. He's pitched as well as he has the major league level. I think they're going to give him a chance to do that. I think it's important to him to do both. I think that's important to why important to the Dodgers also, and why they sort of paid the money they did. So I think they're going to give him every chance to sort of get back on the mound.
So as a hitter, he's been incredible. He did on Tuesday night, the day after, or last night from when we're recording this, he hit a ball like to, I don't know, Oakland. It was that home run ball was incredible. He's been amazing. And I think the other thing we're kind of seeing with him, and you would know better than I, but it looks like he's having fun and he's adjusting well to his new team. And I didn't pay super close attention to the dynamics of the Angels. Obviously, I paid attention to Shohei, but it looks like there's a comfort level that maybe wasn't there before.
I would say that there definitely is a comfort level with him as a Dodger. I think he was there in spurts with the Angels for sure. I think he just didn't get a chance to see it as often just because, I mean, obviously they weren't playing very well. He was also like the dynamics around him were a little bit different. I think it's been sort of talked about a lot that Ipe Mizuhara was around all the time. That was his closest friend. That was sort of like the guy who was just around almost just like a shadow at all times. You don't obviously have that here with the Dodgers. I think that's maybe forced him to sort of come out of his shell a little bit sooner. I mean, you saw that obviously in spurts with the Angels. He had close relationships with the guys, at least in terms of like teammate relationships and being able to like have fun and joke in the dugout. But I think you're starting to see him open up a little bit early for the Dodgers. I think they've been pleasantly surprised with sort of how that part of things have gone. And I think they've seen him get better at the plate. I think they genuinely think he has improved this last month from where he was with the Angels, just because the focus is there. I think you're starting to see maybe him being energized by being in this winning environment with the Dodgers, and understanding that the at-bats are about more than they're about what they sort of build towards when it comes to winning a game. He's seeing him even last night in the ninth inning, where he's a triple shy for the cycle. Miguel Rojas gets a double, a zero out, no out double. So run on second, no out. And he's still looking to pull a grounder to the right side rather than go for the triple just to move the guy over to third. So you're starting to see like small stuff like that. And I think you've seen some Dodgers people say like, oh, he's actually even gotten better. This is the best start he's gotten off to in his career for sure.
Well, and there have been jokes made about it, of course, on Twitter and in social media about how, oh, he's finally on a good team. He's not used to that. But to your point, there is an adjustment when it's now about moving the guy over. It's not like just about getting the triple or getting the home run. It's manufacturing runs, and it's a little bit of a different mindset. And when you're in a winning organization, and I'm not like disrespecting the Angels. I'm just saying like it is a different mindset and kind of changing that. There was the day on opening day, I saw a joke on Twitter. There was the, you know, the base running blunder, which I don't really think was his fault, but there was a video of him in the dugout kind of talking to someone, looking surprised. And there was a joke on Twitter like, wait, so you're saying when I hit, there will be other people on base? I'm not used to that. But there is, I think, truth in adjusting to that. That's kind of one of the differences of being in a more winning organization.
Yeah, I think you'll see some of the comedic moments like that. But I think also it's just there's an energy there too, like where the games that are going to matter for a long time. And where he, even a situation like this past weekend when his back started flaring up, I'm not even sure that the Angels necessarily would have played him that next day. I'm sure they would have sat him, but it's an easier conversation to have when you're on a team that has visions of playing in October as opposed to is fighting to try to get to October. So having those stakes, I think, makes certain conversations easier. And you see this phenomenon happened a lot with guys where, for whatever reason, the Dodgers are able to get guys to be willing to take things that you would think on paper wouldn't make a lot of sense just for the greater good. So they're willing to do that. They're able to do that with guys. And I think Ohtani's no different. Like they want to be part of winning. They want to be part of something special. So it's easier to have conversations with guys. So maybe do stuff that, like, in the short term, like, oh, I want to play, but you can take the longer view of stuff.
Let's talk Mookie Betts, the shortstop. I think obviously Mookie at the plate has been fantastic. Struggled, you know, actually got off to a really, really hot start. Struggled. I actually really hesitate to even use that word. It's just that he got out to such a hot start. He seems to be in the last few days kind of getting his mojo back, for lack of a better term. But again, I struggle to say that because he's Mookie. But in terms of his play at shortstop and in terms of what the Dodgers looking forward, how do you think that plays out? Is that where he'll stay? Do you think they try to get a traditional shortstop? Or I guess that's the end of my questioning. What are your thoughts on all that?
If you had asked me in spring training, I would say, like, yeah, they're definitely going to be still in the market for a shortstop. I think watching the strides that Mookie Betts has had in such a short time, I'm not sure that's like such a certainty. I'm sure if like, the right thing pops up, if a guy like Bo Bichette all of a sudden comes available, or Willie Adames, like, I'm sure they'll explore it. But he's going to be their shortstop. Okay, it seems like. And I think they're at that point now where I think early on in the season, you would still see an occasional start from Miguel Rojas at shortstop. Or late in games, you see defensive replacement, move Mookie Betts over to second base. You're not seeing that anymore. I think they're in a position where, first off, they want to get him the reps. And second off, they are really liking what they're seeing when he gets the reps. Like, they're seeing him evolve into a natural-looking shortstop. And not just one who's been sort of average, but like one who's had moments of above average. So it's been really impressive. I think it's something that even like when this first happened, a lot of people at the Dodgers were like, okay, we are confident in the person that he can figure something out, but like, we'll see how good this is. I think the hope is he's an average shortstop and the bat makes up for it. I think they've been pleasantly surprised with what they've seen defensively. I think Dave Roberts said that last week is he would give it a B+ for that first month of the season, which is really good for a guy who hasn't played the position since he was a teenager. So, I think the Dodgers are impressed with what they've gotten out of him at shortstop, and could they still swing a trade? I'm sure, but I don't think it's as high on the priority list anymore.
I like that you said swing a trade. I don't think you meant for the pun, but I liked it. I liked it nonetheless. Mookie, I mean, there's like nothing he can't do. I always say Mookie Betts is perfect, and I mean, there's like nothing that man can't do. He's even an incredible bowler, but it's pretty amazing. I mean, there are certain players, it's like you look at Mookie and it's like, I'm not sure they're paying him enough. Like, it's really incredible. And it's funny when you look at this lineup, because we talk a lot about Mookie, and maybe this is just me, the fan, so feel free to correct me on this, because when it comes to the 49ers, I am an unbiased beat reporter. When it comes to the Dodgers, I am a full-on Dodgers fan, and there I do not hide that at all. But I feel like we talk about Mookie, we talk about Shohei. I feel like Freddie Freeman, who is tremendous, doesn't even get talked about as much because you're in this lineup of superstars, and he certainly gets talked about, but it's just kind of funny when you look at this lineup top to bottom. I mean, Will Smith is having a hell of a season, and we had the game winning hit the other night, and he rarely gets talked about. Probably if he would on a different team, he would probably be like the superstar.
Yeah. I think you can go a little bit further down the line. Like, Max Muncy's had a real bounce back season. The Oscar Hernandez is in the top five in baseball and runs batted in. He's been one of the better run producers in baseball. Like, this is sort of what the appeal of this lineup was, just sort of being able to have that length to it. Obviously, the bottom lineup has had some spurts where they've gone really silent, and that's something that's concerning going forward. But like, they've had a couple of signs of life here of late. See Gavin Lux having a couple of good games in a row at the plate. So we'll see how long that lineup winds up being come October. But yeah, I think having the three superstar MVPs at the top, along with Will Smith, Max Muncy, Teoscar Hernandez, is a great starting point.
And also Andy Pies. I mean, he's come up and been tremendous for them. And you know whose bat, I say this like you don't know, of course you know, but whose bat seems to be a little hotter as of late is also Kike.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Kike Hernandez started to pick things up a little bit of a slower start to the season. But yeah, he had obviously came off the bench the other night, hit a pinch hit home run to tie things up. He's a guy who's hit left-handed pitching throughout his career. Obviously, last season was a really tough season defensively at the plate. But if he can get back to sort of just being a guy who can hit lefties really well, that's a really valuable role with this team. I think you sort of see all the time with these guys that with how platoon heavy they can get at certain points in the lineup, even if you're not starting, you are usually getting ready to get in around the fourth, fifth inning. Once the starter comes out, then all of a sudden, all hands on deck, and you'll probably have a chance to get in the batter too. So, yeah, I mean, KK Hernandez picked things up. Andy Paz has picked things up. Gavin Lux has started to turn things around a little bit. You're just kind of hoping enough of those guys are at least hitting it close to a league average level by the end of the season, because then that just generates more opportunities for the top of the order.
And when it comes to James Outman, how much concern is there, you know, at the plate there? He got up to such a hot start as a rookie, and then it dissipated, for lack of a better term. I think that is the term. And he's had spurts, he's had moments, but he hasn't really been able to fully get it back. How much concern is there with that?
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens once Jason Hayward comes off the injured list, just because James Outman does have minor league options, and he's in a position where he's not playing every day anymore, and that makes it hard to get out of a rut. He's always been a guy who his swing has been prone to like fits and starts just because of how much swing and miss there is. He strikes out a bunch. So there's going to be times where he's locked in and he looks red hot. But when it goes bad usually. So I'm curious to see if they give him a run down in the minors or give him some sort of run to try to get some everyday at-bats to sort of get things going again. Because I think he showed last season, not necessarily with how he started, after that sort of stretch from May to July where he really struggled, he sort of leveled things off a little bit and showed the ability to adjust. He's a big league caliber player. Like defensively, the glove is there. The bat could be there in spurts. It's just a matter of sort of getting that bat dial back in. So it'll be interesting to see what the next couple months hold for him. But he's a guy who obviously Dodgers still feel pretty highly about.
Okay, and then we have to talk about Chris Taylor. Because Chris Taylor, who gave me one of my most fun moments as a Dodgers fan ever in the one and done game in the, you know, the bottom of the ninth, the game winning home run. But am I correct? It's still, he has two hits this season.
I think it's up to four or five. I think it's four or five. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it's four or five hits this season, but what is going on with Chris Taylor and what can be, I love Chris Taylor. So I want Chris Taylor to be successful. But kind of what is going on there? What are the Dodgers thinking?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really tough spot because he's struggled compared to where his all-star level was in 2021. The last couple of years, he offensively has just been kind of a struggle for him. He's obviously had some moments. He's been close to a league average hitter by OPS plus, but like the power comes in spurts, but that's about it. And then basically all power, like the bats of ball has never been a huge strength of his, but like it's sort of eroded even more. The strikeout rates are incredibly high. So he tried to do a swing change again this winter just to try to lock back into that same feeling he had during that breakout 2017 season. And it clearly has not taken. I think things have spiraled even further. He's in a position where he's barely playing at this point. I think the Dodgers are committed to sort of like giving him a little bit of a longer leash just for next sort of stretch here. But it's not going to be the longest leash. I think they are realistic about where things are. He does have 2 years left on his deal, but it's hard to roster him right now because he's barely playing. He doesn't really, obviously defensively there's value there, but like he doesn't bring anything at the plate right now. So I'm curious to see what they do to try to get him going when he's not really playing all that often. I think he started one time all month. He's going to start again on Thursday, so the next day after recording this, but like he's not really gonna be in the lineup all that often, so it's hard to really work his way out of it. But you're kind of in a position where he doesn't have minor league options, they would have to cut him, they kind of have to hope that he just sorts itself out.
So, you bring up an interesting point because that was something I thought about like a few weeks ago. Is this a guy that they could send down to the minors, see if he can get his swing back? But I guess they can't. But let's pretend or could they? Or can they?
No, they can't without his consent. So and that's, okay, they can't. That's very rare.
okay, so let's pretend in an alternate universe, let's pretend he says, okay, I'll do it. Mentally, though, does that, it's hard to tell. I mean, there's probably no right answer to this, but does that help a player or hurt a player?
It depends on the guy, I'm sure. Like, yeah. I'm sure like there's guys who like a lot of confidence comes from being a big leaguer and understanding that. And also he's in a spot where obviously he's been searching for something at the plate for quite some time. That's why he tried a swing change. He's trying to tap back into something. So maybe it sort of frees him up. So I mean, it depends on the guy, obviously. And it doesn't seem like anything's wrong physically with him. Although if they do find something that is wrong physically with him, it's been on the IL, sort of as a chance to give him a reset, something like that. Okay. So we'll see sort of what happens going forward there.
All right. So last I want to talk about a Dodger who isn't a Dodger anymore, but he's my favorite baseball player. He was my favorite Dodger. Actually, last year during the playoffs, I was sitting with a bunch of people for the game. And one of the guys said, so who's your favorite Dodger? And my friend said, well, sadly, her favorite Dodger isn't a Dodger anymore. And that is Cody Bellinger. And you're going to probably tell me that he's never coming back. But can you lie to me and tell me there's a chance that maybe one day he'll come back?
I think it's a situation where I think they had their time together. I do think that it helped Cody Bellinger a lot last year to sort of have a different environment.
Yes,
to get a chance. Just because of the last couple of years in LA, there's just so much getting thrown at him, so much that he's sort of throwing at himself, trying to make all these changes. I think it was good for him to get a reset somewhere else. And obviously you saw that with some of the production last year. Seems like Chicago's been a pretty good fit. So I think for right now, I would say that the odds are no.
I know. It's sad. You wouldn't know this about me, but I kind of jokingly say this is my fault because I was in Chicago a couple years ago. The 49ers opened their season against the Bears, and I went to a Cubs game. And I have a thing, whenever I go to a new stadium, I get a hat for mm-hmm. the team. So I went to a Cubs game, and I wore a hat and posted it with a C. And I said, the C is for Cody, right? And at that time, he was in the Dodgers. Then when he signed with the Cubs, I was like, oh, my God, this is my fault. I just manifested this. And I made this happen. And last year when the Dodgers played the Cubs, I had a Cody Bellinger sweatshirt on with his Cubs number and a Dodger hat. And everyone was like, you look conflicted. And I was like, well, I am conflicted. This is a very tough time for me. And I'm very sad the 49ers open the season in Monday Night Football against the Jets. But it's one of the two nights that I would have been able to see Cody Bellinger and the Cubs. So I'll be able to see him Tuesday, but I miss one night. And everybody's talking about the schedule release, and no one is talking enough about that, in my whole opinion. It's very sad. All right, I have one more question for you before I let you go. And this is, it's a tough one, and so I apologize, but I think you'll be fine. If the Dodgers do not win the World Series this year, is this season a failure?
I think they're kind of in a position where they understand the stakes here. I think they've already kind of been in like the World Series or bust spot mm-hmm. for a couple of years. No matter really, that's such a weird phrase just because right. of the way baseball is played postseason works. But they simply haven't performed in October. They haven't made it past the NLDS since 2021. I think that at the very least they need an extended postseason run to win another pennant again would sort of help quiet some of it. But also like, it's hard to spend $1 billion in one winter and not win a World Series. So, right. yeah, I think the stakes are high. I think they kind of understand what they're signing up for here. So, yeah, I think the pressure is on more than ever, which is hard to believe.
I know, that's kind of shocking. Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking to me, the Dodger fan who just loves his team so much and lives and dies by them. But that's Michigan and the Dodgers are where I get to be a fan. So I enjoy it. Please let everybody know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at FabianerDiet.
Fantastic. You guys, we are brought to you by Bet Online. We are brought to you by FIVO. You can follow me on Twitter at TracyFGSN, on Instagram at Tracy Sandler. If you like what you heard, and I know you did, please give us a 5-star rating and a super positive review. And those are all my announcements. With that, I'll talk to everybody next time. Bye, all.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.